This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 306, Weak Ties. Hello everybody, welcome again to another episode of GamesAtWork.biz. My name is Andy Piper. I'm coming to you from a secret bunker location somewhere in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, through which I'm receiving fiber internet from Google Balloons. And with me today are two people that you're much more familiar with because they're much more famous than me, and one of them is Mr. Michael Rowe. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Andy. I was just imagining the network topology of fiber coming from balloons to a secret bunker in the middle of the Atlantic. That's awesome. I love it.
I like to, you know, get people thinking. I like
paint
to
paint a word, know, picture.
Exactly. And since the Google balloons have all been decommissioned, you know, my internet may cut off at any moment.
Any moment. We also have our good friend Michael Martin. Michael, how the heck are you?
Awesome. Luckily for me, I have a terrestrial system with an Ethernet plug-in today, so hopefully that will keep us happily consuming bandwidth for the duration of said show. And boy, do we have a show for all of you. So let's see how well we can do on all the topics that we have as we zip through the stories. Starting things off today, we've got a couple of articles that have slightly different takes on the idea of speaking with the dead. And no, this is not a Halloween show, and then no, we're not going to be talking seance sort of stuff here.
What about a Disney takeoff called Coco?
Ooh, for those of you who have enjoyed said beverage or the show, you could talk about that too. But what we're talking about here is the recent innovations from Microsoft, which have been likened to Black Mirror episodes and harken back to some of the things that we've talked about a while ago, where our take on it was immortality. I will find that show notes and put that into the links for us too from a few years ago. The notion was you can bring in a corpus of information, say Andy's recordings from Dog Ear Nation back in the day, or Michael, you know, your musings over on your blog, drink them all in and set them up so that a chatbot, inclusive of video, could come back and you could interact with that chatbot even after you have joined the choir at Blizzardville? No, where is that from? Anyway, after you're dead.
I don't know if it's creepy. From the dead perspective, the creepy part for me is intellectual property perspective, right? Sacrilegium, where you've created a doppelganger that's a digital doppelganger of a Michael. And with the challenges we have with deep fakes and things of that nature already, and then you add the behavior of the person in a close enough likelihood, and if you don't have an appropriate trustworthiness in your AI models, you could actually cause them to say things that sound like Michael, but really aren't and are devious.
Yes, we've talked about this before, and at different times, I think we've been at varying levels of excitement about the concept. And I think I'm at a point in my life and my understanding and thinking about this now that I do find it a little bit creepy, but not necessarily totally negative. However, I think there's a few dimensions that I'm considering. One of them is what Michael just said, like intellectual property. Is everything I ever say in my life or express through digital medium, blogs, podcasts, wherever I may exist or be writing, is that public domain in the future? I mean, probably, because copyright itself at this point, it will expire and to some
98
extent, right?
Years so, past the death of the author.
Right. So there's a couple of elements to that. Also, any point in time digital version of me is a point in time digital version of me. It doesn't evolve any further. I may change my opinions and views over the course of my lifetime, and I can't do that unless you then apply.
Well, it's a machine learning model. AI, that's just it,
right? A machine learning model. So, and then we get to what Michael just said, and the idea that, you know, it may not sound like me, or it may not be represent what I would have thought or done. So there's a load of really complicated ethical and other things here. I think it might be an interesting way of, in the future, for example, kind of interacting with the history of a person and understanding how they might have behaved or understood the world at that point based on the information that's available around that point. It might be like, a instead of going to an encyclopedia and looking up an index record and then going reading some historical document, you have the ability at some point or level to quote unquote interact with that historical individual at that point in their life.
But yeah, and to that point, I want to go back and load in Da Vinci's Instagram feed and figure out what he was going to paint next.
Well, so there is a next out of all this. So the intriguing thing is that through machine learning, there could be an evolution, and there could be a combination too, when you think about it. So let's just be silly for a second and say there could be a combination, conjoined twin of the three of us, so triplets, where the corpus is not an individual, but it's a combination of multiples. So that's certainly possible in a world like this. The second thing, and I hadn't thought about it in these terms until, Michael, you brought it up around intellectual property, and Andy, you expanded on it a little bit, is could you apply the 2030 ethics pack to a Andy from 2021 and see what the 2030 ethics pack might have changed in the way that we interview one of us at that point in the future?
And the answer from the Gizmodo article, to some extent, is, and this is evidently a quote directly from the Microsoft patent, one or more conversational data stores and or APIs may be used to reply to user dialogue and or questions for which the social data does not provide data, i.e. the chatbot can form opinions you don't have and answer questions you've never been asked. Mm-hmm. On that basis. So, yeah, I think it's... Well, what it does for me, apart from anything else, and I have an opinion one way or the other whether or not this should exist, what it's actually doing for me is making me think about all of these dimensions and all of these ethical questions, and hopefully those will be generated in other people as well as they think about it.
Yeah, and I really think that is key, right? Because, you know, One of my favorite classes in my undergraduate degree was a class on ethics, right? And just how do you define your ethical system in such a way that it's consistent, right? And then based off of that, what are the logical extensions of where your thought would go, right? And so I think back to the whole idea of bias in a machine learning model, and we tend to think of bias as racial bias or sexual bias or something like that. But there's tons of different biases in how the data influences the outcome of the decision. And if we take and we take the snapshot of the, you know, 2021 Andy, and we roll it forward with additional data, does the ethical system that's defined in the constraints of the model today hold over time, or does it shift due to data bias or other bias in the model, to where, to go back to a 1984 model, you have doublespeak, and what you say today is exact opposite of what 2030 Andy says based off of rolling the model forward. These are the thoughts that just blow my mind in this whole thing.
I think future Andy would just become more and more angry and sarcastic.
I don't know if future Michael can become more and more sarcastic.
Well, I don't know. There are not an upward bound. There is no ceiling here. There could be a floor for all of us.
Yes, and then you end up in the choir that you were talking about earlier.
Blizzardville? I have to look this up. It's bugging me that I can't remember the name of it. I used to know all my good Monty Python routines. But maybe the last thing that I'd like to throw into the mix on this too is a creation notion. Right. So the intriguing notion for me, too, is the combination of real world stimulus. So some future person could interact with this chatbot. And then through that interaction, there could be an act of creation, something new that comes out of it too. So not so much on the intellectual property rights, but there's also the notion of attribution, right? So if there were to be a song that could come out of an interaction like this, or some other piece of what we would consider to be intellectual property, how do you attribute that to a chatbot that has in its basis the essence of the person, but it's not really the person?
Wasn't there a recent court case on could an AI patent something? I seem to remember that within the last 18 months, right?
Yeah, there may have been something like that dealing with an article or a book or something like that, right?
Right, or a piece of music, I think. Yeah. It might have been a piece of music. And the reason I bring that up, because as we started talking the IP aspect again, it immediately took me to Charles Strauss's Accelerando book, which I've talked about many times on the show, really enjoyed it. And the whole idea of can you patent everything else using machine learning, right? And so it just takes me down that path. It says, if you can create new content from this model, interacting with this model, your point, who owns that new content from a copyright perspective or an IP perspective? So.
Yep. Awesome sauce. All right. So taking these concepts in a slightly different direction, there was an article that I came across from the Los Angeles Times related to what's going on about inoculating the vast swaths of our population and doing it in an ethical and a priority sequence. And one of the things about this particular article was talking about the challenges that our older generation is having in securing an appointment to get their jab and to have the vaccine. And it struck me, and the article actually says it this way too, is that the experiences that we have from playing games, as well as the experiences that we've had in getting that Xbox that's so elusive, or sitting in line to go get the new iPhone, as some of us did once upon a time, actually is good training for dealing with this kind of a situation. And it struck me as a little bit funny, but also that it presents enormous sets of challenges for people who have transportation difficulties, who have technological difficulties because they're just not familiar. And it's a life or death situation for many too. So on the one hand, yes, there's a little bit of funny to it. On the other hand, it really speaks volumes about ethically, how do we make sure that all the people who need something as important as right now the virus, a vaccine, they can get it.
Yeah, to me, this got me thinking along the same lines. But, you know, we feel so bad that we can't get instant access to the latest game, or it takes a whole 2 extra weeks or 2 months to get our Xbox X or whatever the current model is. But I remember back in the day where waits were so long, they actually had songs on how to get your ketchup out of the bottle, right? Remember Anticipation? Right. And these people lived through that time, having to wait. You know, they had to wait for a letter to cross entire countries before they got it, which took days, maybe even weeks at a time. And we have email. So I think the whole idea that it's the elderly generation can take a learning lesson from playing games, taking time to get to a game, is a little not really sincere. I think it's silly, and maybe that's okay. But I do think the key thing here, as you said, the real thing is how do we, and maybe we use, you know, gaming out the system to how do you improve the process for getting the jab, right? And that's the more critical thing here.
I'd like to bring an international perspective, because I think, you know, these are really key issues. And if you read the LA Times article, you know, there are some real, you know, genuine physical issues that apply to, and you know, access issues that you both have spoken about that apply to particular age groups. The way that this particular vaccine rollout is occurring in different countries is not always the same. So I just want to highlight that. This is obviously very frustrating, and at some level, some of these things do apply throughout the population, wherever they are, in terms of like technological capability, ability to drive, all those kind of things. Mm-hmm. There's a danger that assuming that everywhere is the same may not actually be useful.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's face it, and I know international perspective is very different from what's happening in the U.S. because, I mean, we have county-by-county differences just in the state of North Carolina, let alone state-by-state differences across the United States. And that probably also fuels a lot of the frustration and health concerns, right? You've got people we're not a news story podcast, right? But I've seen news stories, right, of people traveling to other states because they can, quote, jump the line, right? Just because it's more of a vacation thing.
And you're right. And that's why I wanted to bring it back to, yes, these are actual genuine concerns, especially with an aging population in terms of technology and access and all those kinds of things. There's a danger that we focus too much on a particular story, but it is really interesting to see how things differ.
Yeah.
100%. 100%. Well, our next prod here into this line is also a pandemic-related one. There's an Atlantic article that talks about the notion of loose, tight relationships, which we've talked about here on more than one occasion too. And it got me thinking about why you miss people that you kind of sort of only barely know. And one of the things that I've missed during our time here in lockdown, and we've had varying degrees of lockdown in various places around the world, would be my usual coffee spot in the morning where Michael goes as well. And there are people that I know by sight. I might not know my name, and I miss them, right? You know, because these are folks that were sort of ordinarily part of the day, and you would say hello, and you'd exchange pleasantries and that sort of thing. And it was interesting the way this article treats how those sorts of relationships are absolutely missing right now from many people's experiences, even depending on your degrees of lockdown. And the treatment was just really quite cool. Andy, yeah. I see you nodding, Michael. I see you nodding too.
Yeah.
I was reminded actually of this week when somebody I've worked with for 7-8 years, who I've literally been sitting opposite for 18 months whilst we were in the office, and we haven't seen each other and we don't directly work together, but he put a coffee ? Entry on my calendar this week, and we had a chat, and it was really good. And it was a little stilted in the sense that, you know, we weren't just bumping into each other in the office, you know, kitchen or whatever to have that conversation. There's obviously been a longer gap in between seeing each other and having stuff to talk about directly. But it was really nice. And I think you're right in terms of the social aspect as well. You mentioned coffee shops, but it strikes me that, you know, I know better than ever now the local shopkeepers that I go and occasionally get my produce from. But you have those social moments. You know, it might be in the a nod and a smile to somebody who you recognize on the train station platform when you're commuting in the morning, all those kind of things, even though you never know them or their name even, or whether, you know, this is fascinating. And of course it plays into the social networking stuff when you go back to Lisa Reichelt's, you know, kind of, to me, very key article from, I can't remember, 2008-09, Ambient Intimacy. The whole idea that, you know, you can be following people online through the corner of your eye, see an occasional tweet or Facebook post or whatever, have a sense of what they're working on or what they're doing, or what they're thinking. It all relates. And I think obviously stuff has moved more online, but that's not, you don't have those serendipitous moments of social connection with people that you're never likely to get to know.
Yeah. And I've been thinking about this too, because, you know, we had season tickets to various soccer matches, and there's a little group of us that all sit next to each other, have no interaction outside of that, right? But you have a relationship in that context. The other thing that I thought about this is from the standpoint of just seeing people as other people, right? at least from a political aspect, if you stay in a bubble, you tend to, it's us, them, it's people that I know and everybody else. It sets up an unintentional friction when you don't have those just serendipitous interactions with people that that you have through, as you say, sitting at the coffee shop. There's a group of people that I know would always sit kind of where I did, and we would have chats, even if it was just pure pleasantries. There's the people that you always see getting on a plane at the airport, right?
Yep.
That are kind of, you kind of nod, you're sitting there wait, all bitching about how long it's taken for the plane to take off, right? But the only interaction is that human interaction face-to-face during that flight. After that, everybody goes their own ways, but it builds camaraderie, for lack of a better term. It builds loose, weak social ties. It builds an ability to recognize people as people and individuals instead of just as a them. And I think mm-hmm. that is something that's being lost.
Yeah, it absolutely has. And I'm grateful, though, for the ones that I've still maintained through technology. So some of the apps that I use, you know, inform me from time to time that so-and-so is doing this or that. And so I still have those, you know, moments of recognition. In fact, a buddy of mine recently was on a business trip, and I said, oh, so welcome home. And the reaction was, wait a minute, how'd you? Oh, that's right. I checked in somewhere else, right? So it still builds enough of that because you're aware and where you're going. So awesome article. I encourage everybody to take a read, and the hopes are as we emerge from this pandemic situation, we're going to be in a spot where those loose tight relationships become a little bit tighter. All right. So speaking of tight, and printers too. I love printers. Speaking of tight, we have an intriguing article, Michael, you noticed from the Alumni Magazine over from the school in Durham known as Duke.
Well, you mean the Harvard of the South? They love that one too.
Yeah.
So as an alumni of Duke, I get magazines, printed paper magazines, right, that come to the house and take time to deliver. And they had a really interesting article in the most recent one about a course that's being offered around gaming and culture and how play is used for understanding culture. And I thought this one was really, really interesting. It aligns nicely with our show premise. Right, we've been doing this 12 years now, I think we talked about last week. And it's nice to see this happening locally. And I was thinking that one of the things that was nice about it is they design a game and play it and learn the mechanics and everything together as part of the class. So you get the entrepreneurial aspects, you get the excitement of learning a new thing, of figuring out the rules together, et cetera. And it really seemed like something that is a way of not just studying gaming, right? It's not just using gaming for a business, but it's using gaming to better understand each other in society. And I thought that was really cool. And it kind of fed nicely into the article that you found about the people's standing in line and trying to figure out the gaming aspect there too. So,
yeah, very, very, very cool. Love it. And I think the notion here about designing it together as a common experience and how that brings people together and spans and crosses boundaries really well. I love that too. Very cool.
Hey, maybe we could get them on the show sometime and have a chat about the course.
That would be a lot of fun. That would be a lot of fun. We should do it.
We should try.
Next up is another article about pandemic and gaming. And in this case, the notion here is it's help keeping in children and adults both sane. and some of the imagery that's used in here are Among Us, which is a great game if you want to induce paranoia, if you play that, you know, once or twice. And others are just to help people while away some of the time and do something engaging. So I know I found myself spending time playing some games as sort of a de-stress activity and disappearing into a virtual world for at least a little bit. What did you think about this, Michael?
Oh, exactly. You know, I use gaming as a way to wind down. after an extremely stressful day. I always tell my wife I'm going to go upstairs and kill people. It's a cathartic view, right? So you don't actually go out and kill people. You go into a virtual environment. You kill people on the screen. I don't want it realistic. I don't want it super realistic. I don't need blood splattering everywhere. I just need the release of taking down the big boss. And I don't mean work boss. I mean the boss of the game.
Can I hand you another shovel?
I'll keep digging. But, you know, it's a thing you got to do every once in a while. It's a great stress release. I like online MMOs so that it's not you by yourself. You can do it by yourself if you need, but sometimes you work in a group. You figure out a problem. I think this is a really good article to kind of, you know, talk about how we handle this, right? And, you know, I have not played Among Us yet. So I might have to look at it. I keep hearing lots about it. It's a short game, I understand, though.
It's a very
It can be.
Yeah.
It depends on how many people are playing, but yeah, it can be quite quick.
Mm-hmm. And you know, the other aspect of the article, too, is that for parents with children who are doing so much digital and distance learning these days, there is the worry about additional screen time as comes from this sort of thing, too. And
that's why we have eye surgeries.
I would have to say, you know, just in my own family, there are occasions when each of us are sitting in the same room and on our own individual devices. And so there is an aspect here, too, that says, you know, look, we're alone together and we're together alone and we can do better. Just my point of view. And I'm guilty too, so it's not just me saying, you know, I'm the one who's off my device, right? So speaking of devices, there's a Rubik's Cube out here that looks like you can play a Rubik's Cube while playing other games on it at the same time, like Cut the Rope or Widgets or other stuff. It's actually a very simple Rubik's Cube because every screen is there's four of them on each side. So if you're trying to solve for the colors, you should be able to do it relatively quickly, right?
Now, this, Andy, you found this. This was really, I thought this was cool.
It is cool. It was funny. We were before in the pre-show. We were talking about this. The three of us and Michael said, "What's that game with the little thing that eats fruit?" And my mind went to Pac-Man.
Yeah.
But Michael was apparently thinking of that really old game, Cut the Rope. So we have we clearly come from or have just different views of the past and eras and stuff. Look, it is cool. It's also kind of nuts and weird. And I mean, maybe it's funny. I've been watching old episodes of Star Trek, old episodes of The Next Generation. I mean, not the original series or anything more recent. But and I was thinking, you know, I thought about this many times whilst watching The Next Generation, you know. Kids have, you know, potentially are growing up in this super scientifically advanced world, and they just assume and understand everything in all the way down to the molecular level from the day that they're Wesley Crusher, right? But and so maybe these kind of tools and toys will be common in future. I'm not really sure about the point of it. It is just a cool thing.
It's a cool widget, and I thought it was really cool. The thing that I thought was so funny is the guy writing the article about it was talking about, you know, to your point, Michael, it's a simple Rubik's Cube, right? And yep. He had a way of solving the simple Rubik's Cube. It usually began with like prying off the tiles or popping it apart and putting it back together.
Who would do that?
But I'm sitting there going, dude, this is so much easier. You just hack the software. Come on, it's just software now. You don't have to take it apart. So I coming at it from a different perspective than others, that was my take. But the other thing that I thought was interesting about it was it's one of these things that technically it's really neat, and they're trying to find use cases for it. It's like, hey, you could use it to have your widgets. And I'm like, well, I have my widgets on my device I'm using. I don't need another device with a 5-hour battery life with my widgets that would burn down in 5 hours.
Eight processors, 24 individual screens.
Eight
speakers. The WoW Cube entertainment system. I wonder which company they're riffing off there. It looks cool. I have far too many ridiculous items in my life that are gadgets, and I've never really fully used them, so that would just be another one. But, you know, we are a show about gaming and tech and all kinds of other things, so it felt an obvious thing to mention.
Oh, absolutely.
So we've got lots of things that we'd love to mention for the remainder of the show. Many of them are going to be like some super fast hits, just because of time, and they are very relevant. So Minecraft, we've talked about that a long time. I think, Andy, you were the one who actually introduced it on the show the first time eons ago. Microsoft has used Minecraft to demonstrate their sustainability report, which is kind of cool.
I thought that was really awesome.
Yeah,
I love this. I think this is really cool, the fact that you can get it as a free download in their marketplace. It's part of their education program as well. I think this is really neat stuff.
Yeah. So I will have to get my daughter to give a look-see at it. She's been doing lots of Minecraft builds here as of late and eagerly showing them to us. Michael, you found a really cool website called restofworld.org. You want to touch on that for a minute?
Yeah, just real quick. We know that most tech podcasts tend to think that there's only two places that do tech, Silicon Valley and other places. And, you know, as we've pointed out, there's a huge Silicon Valley on the east coast of the U.S. too. So then it's like, oh, it's only the U.S. And then there's some really strong stuff in Europe, right? London, right? The problem is that's pretty much where everything ends. Everybody thinks that's the world of tech. And this is a website. It's a news site. It's been out for, I think, about 18 months or more. And it focuses on all the tech outside of where you would normally biasly think of those areas. So South Korea, Brazil, India, you know, Uzbekistan, right? You know, you name it. It's a view of tech from outside of the traditional spaces that most people talk about when they talk about tech. And I just thought it'd be a great site to reference and try to expand our horizons and understanding of tech in the rest of the world.
Get that fully international perspective, I guess is what you're saying, right?
Yep.
All right, so cruising along, a couple of quick touches here. One is something Michael found also. A Korean band called Maytree is an a cappella group that does Windows sounds. You have to listen, you know, close your eyes. It's amazing. That's all we can say. We could play it, too, I suppose.
No.
But no.
I wouldn't want a copyright problem.
It's their thing. Things that we can also listen to, apparently, is Dolly Parton. So if you're walking around with an Apple Watch and you've got Fitness Plus, there are celebrity guided walks. Anybody done this already?
I have it installed. I haven't had a chance to do it yet. I try to take walks daily. And this seems actually really neat because it's basically a conversation with them. It's kind of a podcast conversation, listening to them while you take a walk. And then they play some songs.
Okay.
So I have to try it out. I have been playing around with Fitness Plus. I like the treadmill workouts so far.
Okay.
I have signed up. I've got the trial because I got a new Apple Watch, and you get the trial. So I was exploring some of the stuff on the Apple TV the other evening. I have yet to actually partake, but and I know that a number of weeks ago I said I would never be getting involved in Fitness Plus, but you know, it would be stupid not to take advantage of the free trial and at least see whether it is for me. So I think the time to walk stuff looks interesting as well.
The one thing, Andy, you will probably learn, or maybe not, maybe you're much more talented than I am, but the Dance Fitness Plus stuff. I've lost the ability to dance, evidently.
There's no problem there. I never had that ability, so it's fine.
I won't even go there. Next up, for those of you in the United States, you will soon be able to order stamps from the U.S. Postal Service, which you should do, and these stamps have droids on them, which are going to be like super awesome. So check it out; that'll be a lot of fun. And
Star Wars droids, Star Wars droids. Yes, not yes, just not like I mean, yes, droids. Okay. I mean, Star Wars droids are droids, but yeah,
and not all Star Wars droids. It's some Star Wars droids, and Mandalorian.
Yeah. Yep. So a few in there. So I'm sure Disney, you know, helped cut a deal with that too. Maybe the last thing that we can touch on here is one that both you, Michael, and you, Andy, were super excited about, Babylon 5. I've actually not even seen it, so
ever?
It's out. I've never seen it.
You
never once.
What? I'm sorry, you've lost your Michael card.
time and energy. Haven't watched Firefly
the plus side.
Either, so there you go.
Well, you've got so much great content that you could go watch and have your mind blown by. It's amazing.
Yes, this is
great news. This is good news.
This is good news. I highly recommend it. You got to watch all 5 seasons back to back. Just binge it straight. Take some time off from work. It'll only take you a couple of weeks. It is the epitome of a well thought out end to end story over 5 seasons, and it sucks you in. It breaks all your expectations. You think it's Star Trek at the beginning, like a bad ripoff of Star Trek, and then it takes you down a beautiful journey. And they finally have re-released the content, remastered in a way that it's not all ripped to shreds and screwed up on the graphics. The CGI that they did in the mid-90s was so far ahead of everything at the time, and it still holds up now that it's remastered correctly. Highly
very
recommended.
Very, very cool. And last, there is a Godzilla King Kong clash of the Godzilla versus King Kong is coming.
Yes. So
obviously socially distant in rubber suits. No, just kidding.
No, they're not socially distanced. Well, we've had so much fun talking this week, and we would love to hear from you. Do us a favor, go over to iTunes and rate us and or subscribe. It really helps others find us. I was chatting with one of our longtime listeners and buds, Ian, this week, and the new iTunes makes it harder to figure out how to rate a podcast. So you have to find the podcast, click into the podcast overview, and go down past all the episode, it looks like. And we have a couple of years worth to go through. So we would love to hear from you.
Yeah, absolutely. So until next week, we'll say happy listening, and we'll see you soon. Bye.
Bye.
See ya.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.